and talk a little football after last night's Hall of Fame game with our buddy Benjamin Brown. So, Ben, why don't we start with the two teams that played? The Chicago Bears have the third easiest schedule. Caleb Williams, who we didn't see last night, the number one overall pick, might have the best trio of wide receivers to help him out in all of the National Football League. How much of a chance do you give them to be a surprise playoff team?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways the market has in some ways caught up to them. I think, you know, obviously before heading into the draft and free agent cycle, they were probably a team to buy into. But, you know, they very much, I would say, kind of hit the area, the nail on the head at every single angle from, you know, an offseason standpoint. And I think in a lot of ways are kind of this trendy up-and-coming type team. And to be honest with you, I do want to buy into the hype. I do think it's valid and justified, like you said. I don't necessarily think they're the best wide receiver unit in football, but they have to be close. And if you buy into Caleb Williams at all, this is a team that when you look around the rest of the NFC, like there is some potential to be relatively underwhelming from a lot of other teams, and they are very much a team that I think could not only make some noise getting back to the playoffs, but could even maybe win a playoff game and really establish themselves as front runners for the conference, I would say, when it's all said and done heading into next season.
Speaking of trendy up-and-coming teams and the Texans, do you think C.J. Stroud duplicates last year's performance statistically, like adds to 4,100 yards, goes over 25 touchdowns, or is there going to be a little bit of give and take there because there's going to be adjustments made to him even though he is improved?
Yeah, I very much buy into the idea that, you know, a second-year player with some film under him is maybe a little, not necessarily easier to defend, but there's more variety in the ways in which you can approach him. I also think in some ways, you know, his turnover-worthy play rate didn't really match up with the number of interceptions he actually faced. So having a little bit more of those setbacks as well, like there is definitely some room for him to regress. Now the opposite side of that argument is obviously, you know, continuing to surround himself with, you know, adequate and, you know, above average playmakers at the wide receiver position, I think could maybe in some ways circumvent that. But I expect even with a little drop off for the Texans to kind of still be in the very much thick of things. I think defensively, they're still kind of evolving and arriving, but are going to be in a better spot in DeMeco Ryan's system in this next year. So I think even with a little bit of a setback from CJ Stroud, which should be fully expected, I very much think that, you know, the upside case for them very much makes sense with kind of what we're hearing from a lot of the people that kind of are hyping up some of these teams headed into the, you know, regular season big games.
Ben Brown covering the NFL for us here on our Blitz. Bill Barnwell of ESPN wrote a really good piece about Brock Purdy last week and about what he might be able to get on the open market when it's time. And he suggested $65 million is not out of the question, and he kind of ran through a bunch of why that might happen. Well, right now the story on him is he's throwing a lot of picks in practice, which I think is outrageous and stupid and doesn't matter, and I can't believe that's a story. But I do want to know, do you view Brock Purdy as like a top-shelf quarterback who is actually the reason San Francisco's offense works, or a beneficiary in a lot of ways that is replaceable by Kyle Shanahan with those weapons?
I think it's a really good question and one that we still probably don't have the full answer to. There obviously are arguments and people on both sides who feel really passionately about it, but to me, like the situation around which Brock Purdy has been most successful has been a symptom of Kyle Shanahan being so great at a yards after the catch ability and a really strong receiving unit. And I think the question is going to be with Brock Purdy, if you pay him top of market range and you lose some of these guys like the Deebo Samuels or maybe the Brandon Ayukes of the world, like, can he elevate an offense then? And that's still the question that we're not really going to have answered until he actually does get paid. I'm assuming he is at least going to get top 10 type money. But for me, I think in a lot of ways it is going to be similar to, you know, a Kirk Cousins type situation where he could even put up really good stats, but come that must-win type game in the playoffs, it might not be enough for him to actually get there on a veteran-type deal. So winning with him on a rookie deal is a completely different calculation than what it would be on a veteran deal. And I think for that reason, I would have a little bit more pause in paying Brock Purdy than what I think even the San Francisco 49ers are going to do coming up here in the next year or two.
It just seems to me as if we do have the answer. You know, everyone says that we don't, but they went to the Super Bowl before Purdy with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I know that their offense is better now, but I feel like that is the whole point, right? The previous quarterback, who we all know is not that good, who went to Vegas and got benched for Aiden O'Connell, who the Receivers show on Netflix told us Devontae Adams couldn't stand. Like, they were in the Super Bowl and should have beat the Chiefs with him. Isn't that the answer?
Yeah. It is, and I think that's really got to be, like, the pushback. And to me, like, I know Brock Purdy, people think it's key to that, but, like, if they lose Trent Williams this year, even if they have Brock Purdy in the fold, that's going to be a completely different-looking offense and one that could struggle quite a bit. So I think if you don't buy into Brock Purdy, I think this year is really a key point in maybe the development not necessarily being at the top-end range that we projected from the past couple of seasons. When that happens, I do think we very much are going to have the answer, like you said, for sure.
So I couldn't really fully grasp yesterday what was changed about the rule with the cheat motion, as we call it, that the Dolphins and the Rams and some of these other McVay, McDaniels, Shanahan teams, all those guys that were here in Washington do. But for people listening, it's the thing the Dolphins did, where they got like running head starts and started to go up the field at the snap. And made famous, and then everyone started doing it all over the league. And now it sounds like it's going to be penalized or flagged differently. What do you make of that, and what do we need to know?
Yeah, it's definitely like the CFL-type rule of differentiation, right? But it's basically like any sort of upfield movement, from a backfield-type player is basically going to be false start or illegal motion, basically, depending on where he actually tried to direct his movement.
That was always the case. Did they just not officiate it with the same fervor?
I think they didn't initiate with the same fervor. I think if there was like a symptom of them running straight in line, they wouldn't necessarily call it. I think it's going to be like kind of a point of emphasis. And I do think we have some of those evolutions of rules happen where there's going to be more of a focal point on it. And I do think we're going to see it probably flagged more dramatically than what it definitely should have been, I would say, in prior seasons. And I think overall, it's probably going to help defenses a little bit for sure, but probably not be all that dramatic of a move that we're really going to see on, you know, a macro type level from a data perspective for sure.
What is your expectation for Jaden Daniels this year?
I think there's a lot of intrigue. I think from a fantasy perspective, I'm excited, to be honest with you. Like, I think as far as like, you know, a little bit further down from the elite quarterback tier, Jaden Daniels offers a lot of intriguing upside. Obviously the help is going to be seeing them the first couple weeks of the season, seeing how, you know, Kingsbury is kind of operating this Washington offense coordinator position. Like, that's going to be the key to me, but I think they have the weapons in place. And to me, I know it's really easy to side with Caleb Williams as far as like the upside case, who's going to be rookie of the year. But to me, like, there's no other guy that I'd really want to buy into outside of Jaden Daniels. And I think they, in a lot of ways, have a similar makeup to what the Bears are putting forth and could also kind of be one of these surprising type teams that definitely, you know, exceeds expectation with a rookie quarterback at the helm in their first year.
Last one, Ben Brown, our Beltway Blitz on the NFL. Eagles or Cowboys, who wins the NFC East?
Oh, that is a good question. I honestly am not in love with either. I think when it's all said and done, I'm more inclined to see the Cowboys kind of have the wheels fall off. When that happens, I do think it opens up, you know, doors for other teams. I am still in some ways concerned about, you know, the Eagles' direction at both offensive and defensive coordinator positions. I don't know if Kellen Moore is necessarily going to fix what the issues were offensively last year. So I think both are probably worse off. And I think the Eagles probably win in what's a little bit more of an ugly division than what we're kind of projecting right now, for sure.
Ben, we appreciate you, bro. Good catching up. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show. Enjoy some football.
Yes, sir, we will. That is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny without Danny today on the Fan.